listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 176 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and today we're going to be talking to Ari Herstand and discussing 26 things to do before you release your song or album. Before we get to that interview, though, just a reminder, it is time. It is that time of year where we're heading into the holiday season, and it's super important to get your music out there and distributed worldwide. Don't wait for the day before Christmas and go, hey, it might be a good idea for me to get that new album up. This is the time of year when people are getting gift cards, they're building playlists, they're engaged with music more so than they are at other times of the year. So get your music out there now so you can take advantage of all the holiday rush. And it's also the time where people are still buying music, so you want to be a part of that. Just head on over to members.cdbaby.com, sign up that album, sign up that single, and get it out there so your fans can have something new to enjoy during the holiday season. All right, we've had Ari Herstand on the podcast before. Ari's an artist, an independent artist. He has his blog, Ari's Take. He's also an actor. You might see him pop up on a show from time to time. And now he can say he's an author with the coming release of his new book titled How to Make It in the New Music Business: Practical Tips on Building a Loyal Following and Making a Living as a Musician. As of the release of this podcast, the book is still not out, but during the interview, Ari tells you how you can get the book, and his advice has been featured on our blog. He was at our DIY Musician Conference this past fall, and he's also writes lots of great articles for his blog, Ari's Take, and Digital Music News. So he's got great advice and perspective as an independent artist. So let's get to my interview with Ari. Well, joining me is Ari Herstand, independent artist, actor, and now author. You're adding a new one to the
I just keep the hyphenations going. You can never have enough hyphenations.
There you go. Totally. So how's it going? It's been it seems like it's been a couple of years since you've been on the podcast. Time flies, but things going well for you?
Yeah, things are going great. You know, I had an awesome time at the CD Baby conference. I guess when was that? Last month, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
You know, connecting with so many people there, that was amazing. And now, just it's kind of I've been in studio recently, launching this new funk band that I'm working on, like a very horn-heavy '70s style funk band, which is. Really been a lot of fun, and kind of spending a lot of time doing that, and then just kind of pushing this book out, which is coming pretty soon. So
So you've got a book. Since I added author to the your new title there, it's How to Make It in the New Music Business, and it's coming out December 6th. Correct?
That is correct. Yep.
Tell us about what made you decide to write a book and what that process was like.
Yeah, I mean, honestly. Had you told me 4 years ago that I would be coming out with a book, I would have called you crazy. I mean, I never got into, you know, I never expected to be where I am right now when I started my music career like 10, 12 years ago. But I mean, really, the reason that I wrote this book is the same reason that I started Ari's Take. And that is because, you know, I had learned so much from my music career and then from kind of talking to so many other artists and learning, you know, from my own mistakes and their mistakes and everything. And I wanted to pass on everything I was that I learned and that I knew to other driven, hardworking musicians. Because, I mean, really, before I started Ari's Take, I had just kind of naturally taken to the business. And I, when I was living in Minneapolis, people kind of knew in the scene that I was kind of the guy who knew about the business side of music. And so they would come to me with questions. And then when I would go on tour heavily, I was playing a lot of universities and high schools and clubs. And then people would just kind of send me Facebook messages or emails asking me questions, you know, basic stuff like, how did I book the tour? Or how did I get songs placed on the TV shows? Or is this a good club deal? Or, you know, that kind of stuff that I kind of knew but had to learn the hard way. And eventually, I tried to respond to everybody who hit me up. And eventually, I didn't have the time to respond to everyone. So I just kind of, my brother is a web developer, and my best friend is a graphic design artist. So we kind of put together Ari's take and put everything up there, just kind of answered a lot of the questions I was getting, put them all up there. And then it just kind of grew. And as I saw that musicians were responding and passing them around, and it was actually helpful for a lot of people, I just kept writing these things. But I realized at a certain point, like, there was so much more information that I wanted people to know about that I couldn't really get out in just a simple blog post. So that's why I guess I decided to write this book, was because I wanted to expand on a lot of the concepts that I talk about in Ari's Take, but also more so, you know, I've heard from people that say, you know, they've read all my Ari's Take posts, and they're still kind of struggling with what to do, where to go, and how to kind of move forward. And so I wanted to put this roadmap together, just like a very cohesive manual that you could use to really format and structure your music career. Because even if you kind of get all the information from the various blogs or resources online, it's still really tough to know, like, how to guide your music career and where to go. So that's really why I wrote the book, and I really hope it helps a lot of people.
Yeah, it is interesting when you think about it that a lot of the books that you find out there when you like search for music business books, very few, if any, are written from the artist perspective, which is really weird in the modern music business that there's not a whole lot of resources about how an independent artist, or even if you're not even just trying to stay independent, just about seeing things from the artist perspective. So I'm sure it'll be a valuable resource. So you gave me this little PDF that is sort of a support piece to your new book called 20 Things to Do Before You Release Your Song or Album.
26,
yes. What did I say?
There's a lot. 20.
20, yeah.
There's a lot.
I'm looking right at it. I don't know what it's been a weird week. I don't know.
Totally.
26 things to do before you release your song or album. And I thought, you know, since you got this new book out, and is this PDF that you sent me something that I can make available to people listening to the podcast, or is there a link I can send them to that they can check it out?
So yeah, actually, so we launched the pre-order. We kind of teamed up with Pledge Music for the pre-order for the book, just because so many musicians are familiar with Pledge Music. And so if you actually pre-order the book before November 30th, you get this PDF download instantly. So you can just go to pledgemusic.com/Ari Herstand or just ariherstand.com is the website. And then you, if you buy just the basic book package, which is cheaper than it is on Amazon, you'll get this right away. So, you know, we'll go through it all now, but if you want the PDF, instant download, you can go get it when you, get the book.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, it's well designed and laid out nicely. And even though we're going to talk through these ideas, there is way more information in this PDF than we could get through in even if we talk for a couple hours. We'll have to skim through a lot of the information, just because it's pretty detailed.
And this is totally. And just so people who are listening to this after November 30th, this is an excerpt from the book too. So you can grab the book. You know, if this is after December 6th. It's in the book too. So so you don't worry that you won't find this information anywhere else.
The thing I like about this list, before we get into it, is that it's a common problem we see. You know, we here at CD Baby, we work with thousands and thousands of artists, and we have hundreds of them calling us daily for, you know, just advice or help understanding how to release music. Mm-hmm. And I think a common problem is we understand the writing and recording process, and then we know we need to distribute it as artists, but then, like, suddenly it's like, okay, well, now what? And and there's a lot of business that needs to be taken care of in order to make sure that, you know, you're ready to go and have a successful release. So that's kind of what this list is tapping into.
Totally. Yeah.
So let's get started. Let's
Okay. Yeah.
Take it away.
All right, cool. So number one is market research. And the reason, and what market research is basically just seeing if people like your music or which songs they like best of the songs that if you're releasing an album on your album. It's a good way to pick your lead-off single or kind of your lead-off song. Because your favorite song may not actually be the one that resonates the most with your fans or with just the general population. So I think market research is so important, especially also because even, you know, if there's songs, this could even be before you even hop in studio and you have just demos and you're really trying to figure out which ones to record. You can just test the demos out on just kind of these random groups of people. So, there's this site called AudioKite, audiokite.com, and they're one of these market research kind of sites for musicians, which I've used a bunch for my own songs, and it's awesome. I mean, basically, you pay like $30 or something, and you can get 100 people or so listen to your song, and then they rate it in a bunch of different categories. They can comment on it, and the numbers actually maybe off. I think it's $20 for 100, $30 for like 200, and so there's different tiers. You can actually spend more money and get a bunch of people, a larger sample base, and it's really nice because then you can see if people are responding more to different songs, and then you know which ones to release. Other sites that are good with this, you know, Sound Out is another one that does very similar stuff for musicians and for music. And then there's some other ones that are a little bit more specialized. So, you know, there's Fluence out there. It's FLUENCE.io. And that's if you want to like send your songs to individual people, because so kind of more like gatekeepers or music industry people. And if you want their opinion, you'll pay a lot more and you're just targeting one person, but you can get some kind of industry opinions on that. And then there's also this Music X-Ray, and I know I've heard a lot of things from musicians I talk to about Music X-Ray and just kind of their opinions, and I've tested it out and I've tried it, and the one thing that I'm not going to speak to kind of the opportunities that you pay to submit to on Music X-Ray, but the thing is that you can also similarly get industry people to review your music and rate it on a scale. So you can check that one out too. But really my favorites are kind of AudioKite. And then I've heard of SoundOut, but I haven't actually tested that one out. So, that's really important, for the market research side before you kind of get going.
So how much have you, when you've used those things, have you actually, how much weight have you actually put into the feedback you've gotten from those things?
You know, it's a really good question because, I hold strong to what I felt were my best or something like that. But then I guess I chose one of the songs. I was kind of deciding between two songs on which to do the music video for. And I put both songs. They were finished. So this was actually after I released my album, because I discovered this market research stuff before. Or after, rather, I came out with my album, but I was deciding what to do, which song to do the music video for, and I was leaning towards one of my songs, but then when my market research came back, when the AudioKite reports came back, the other song actually had like much higher rating, oddly enough, and so I'm like, well, they're responding a lot more to this song. So then we actually chose the one that got a higher AudioKite rating to do the music video for. So, you know, it can be useful, and sometimes you just kind of have to swallow your pride and realize that, you know, it's hard to know like, your own music and figure out and really like objectively choose your best songs or objectively really know, how you stack up amongst other artists. Because also, even in addition to helping you choose your songs, it can also help you know if you're ready or not for prime time, because a lot of these sites, they'll say what the percentile you fall into. So, you know, if you're falling in kind of the below 50% percentile of all other music that has been submitted to these sites, then, you know, you gotta have to work on some stuff a little bit more. Maybe you're not actually ready to release this record, and maybe you just have to tighten some things up and get some more kind of objective ears on it. So that can be actually really helpful also.
All right. We could probably talk a whole episode about that, yeah, that experience, but we've got 25 other items to hit. So
moving forward,
number two.
Yeah. Number two is, register your publishing. So, because, you know, we're on the CD Baby podcast, I'll do the quick shout out to, the CD Baby Pro. So this is basically, you know, in a nutshell, when you release a song to iTunes and Spotify and Apple Music and Tidal and Amazon, everywhere else, basically, when you distribute your song, you know, you're going to get some of the money back, but not all of it. So if you wrote the song, if these are original songs, you're not getting all of your songwriter royalties back. Even if you have your music registered with a performing rights organization like ASCAP or BMI, you still aren't collecting all of your songwriter royalties. Not to get too deep into what exactly those songwriter royalties are, because that could also take up an entire podcast. But basically, what you need to know is just you need to register your publishing, and either if you distribute with CD Baby, then use CD Baby Pro. You can keep it under one roof. That's great. If you distribute, you know, with other distributors, or you have a bunch of songs that you've written for other people, I recommend using SongTrust. They're phenomenal, and I think SongTrust is what powers CD Baby Pro, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So SongTrust is real solid too. If you're like a songwriter and maybe you like come out with your album on CD Baby and you do the pro for that, it's cool. But maybe you co-write with a bunch of other artists and you're an indie songwriter, but you still want to collect those songwriter royalties, you can kind of use that, and they'll track down all of your royalties. So that's how you can kind of get that. And that's important that a lot of people don't really realize. Cool. So and that being said, number three is register every song with a PRO, with a performing rights organization. ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, whoever you're a part of. But that being said, if you do sign up with an admin publishing company like SongTrust, or if you use CD Baby Pro, they will register your songs with your performing rights organization also. So you don't, like, this step is it's kind of just acknowledging that this is important. But that being said, if you have your songs already registered with your PRO and you haven't registered with a admin publishing company yet, once you do, they'll sync up to your ASCAP or your BMI account, and they'll grab all the info that you've already ingested there, and then they'll kind of sync that together. So you can kind of go both ways. But this is kind of a way to just link everything up.
Yeah, that's a really important step, because even artists who have, you know, it happens all the time. I'll talk to them, and they've signed up with a PRO as a writer, but they've never put any of the information about their songs in. And then they're like, "Why haven't gotten any performance royalties?" I'm like, "Well, they don't know what you wrote magically.
Right.
You gotta tell them."
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So that's really important, just to kind of get all that stuff lined up together. So number four is register with Sound Exchange. Now, just quickly explain what Sound Exchange is. Sound Exchange collects money for artists and labels. So basically for the sound recording. So for the master recording, the actual recording, whereas like PROs, ASCAP, BMI, and the admin publishing companies, they collect royalties for songwriters and publishers. Sound Exchange is kind of the other side of that, collects for the actual recording for the artist. So, you know, if you come out with a cover song, you get royalties from that, from Sound Exchange. You didn't write it, so you won't get the royalties from your PRO, but you it's your recording, so you want to register those songs with Sound Exchange. Your originals and covers, just basically every song that you come out, you release with your artist project, register with Sound Exchange. And what's nice, you can go to soundexchangerightnow.com if you've never registered with them before, and they have a both option. So if you're not with a label, Before it was really difficult to navigate the site, and believe me, like I've over the years, I've kind of looked at SoundExchange's evolution, and I signed up for them like 5 years ago, and you had to like literally send in paper forms, and then it's insane. It is so confusing. And then like even 3 years ago, they had you had to do sign up two completely separate times, once as an artist, and then once again as a label, because I'm like I am my own label. But luckily now they have a both button. So if you go to SoundExchange and you are your own label, meaning you distribute, you know, with CD Baby or somebody, and it's your music and you're the artist, and you can click both and you register your songs that way. And you just kind of follow the steps and you let them know all the songs that you have. And they've started to build out an online portal. So people who are registered with SoundExchange, you can actually go online now and claim this. Your artist account. They didn't have this online portal before, but now you can log in and you can kind of start to see your report, similar to how ASCAP and BMI have done it for years. SoundExchange finally has an online system where you can kind of go in and see your information there. So, and they just so you know what SoundExchange is collecting, they're basically collecting digital radio royalties. So like when your songs are played on Pandora or Sirius XM or any digital radio station, they collect those royalties for you. And just like a fun aside, a fun little story, one of the Ari's Take readers, he wrote in and just asked a question. He's like, yo, you know, I just want to make sure that I'm getting all the money from everywhere that I know to get it from. And we were chatting, I'm like, oh, have you heard of SoundExchange? He's like, no, I haven't heard of that. I'm like, yeah, go sign up for that. They might have some money for you. And he wrote me back a few months later. He's like, Ari, well, first he sent me $100 tip via PayPal. I'm like, yo, what's that for? Like, you didn't need to do that. Like, I mean, I'll take your money and I appreciate it, but that's too kind. Like, why are you sending me this money? And he's like, Ari, my first check from SoundExchange was $10,000. I'm like, are you joking? Like, what? Apparently, this dude, he writes children's music, and children's music kills it on Pandora, and he was getting millions of plays on Pandora, like children's radio stations, and he had no idea. And SoundExchange, luckily, kind of holds onto your money for about 3 years, and so his first check was massive, and he still is getting massive checks from SoundExchange. So, you know, it's worth, and I think, Kevin, you mentioned at the conference when we were chatting, wasn't it like classical piano music or something does really well on Pandora?
Yes, it does. There's lots of solo pianists that use CD Baby for distribution that have told me that they make thousands and thousands of dollars a month off of Pandora, which makes sense. You know, it's the kind of thing where it's easy to put on some nice background music and listen, and I'm sure it gets used that way in a lot of places, so those artists typically do really well as well. Yeah, and we've done a lot of matching exercises with SoundExchange over the years, and it's been amazing. Like, we've had a lot of these stories like that one you mentioned where someone signs up and like, all right, they keep telling me I should sign up, and they go in there like, holy crap, I just got paid big time. You know? So definitely need to do that. And they have gotten a lot better. Like you said, it used to be a total nightmare trying to get signed up, but it has gotten a lot better.
Totally. Cool. So number five, get on allmusic.com and Discogs. So if you don't know what these are basically kind of the most inclusive credits databases out there. Unfortunately, there really isn't the, you know, liner notes, the credit information as part of kind of the streaming services or iTunes, or unless you download like the digital booklet, which most don't really come with. But for the most part, you know, my ideal world would be when you go onto Spotify or Apple Music, all the credits are there. Like, who played drums on track three? Who played
Absolutely.
Cello on track four? Like, that drives me insane.
Me too.
Just so crazy. The lyrics, you have everything. So that's a topic for another time. But basically, AllMusic and Discogs are really the only central places online that has most of this information. So a lot of people turn to AllMusic to find the info. And AllMusic has started to sync up with other outlets, and they may very well in the next couple of years sync up with Spotify or Apple Music or something for that credit information. I hope. So you want to just let them know that you exist and send them all your information. So you can actually go to allmusic.com/product dash submissions and follow the instructions there, and they step you through how to send in the information. Or you can go to Discogs, that's DISCOGS.com, and then follow the instructions there.
Yeah, and AllMusic, if you don't know, is where iTunes and Apple Music pull bio information from and album images. So you'll want to make sure you have a profile there, because there's several services that use that as sort of their first go-to database to try and find artist information. But
totally, yeah. Spotify actually also is pulling from there as well for the kind of the reviews. So it's they call it bio, but it's really someone at AllMusic who's reviewing
yes,
it,
yes.
Who like reviews it, and it's disjointed and it's annoying because a lot of times it's not up to date. But hopefully they'll work that out. But yes, if you want any chance of getting your quote unquote bio or really review on iTunes and on Spotify, you gotta send your stuff to AllMusic for
yeah.
sure. Cool. So number six, register the copyrights. That's something that a lot of people overlook. And so if you want to just kind of protect yourself from someone, stealing is such a harsh word, but basically copying your song and trying to profit off of it later without the proper credit or anything like that, definitely copyright your songs. You can go to copyright.gov if you're in the U.S., if you're an American artist, and you can copyright your songs there. And there is a trick where if you have, like, you're coming out with an album all at once, basically for $55, you can copyright every song on your album that you're coming out with at the same time for $55, instead of having to pay $55 per song or kind of go that way. It's just a little hack that saves you a lot of money. And so I typically do that when I come out with my albums, just kind of put them all in a bunch there, because it just, I don't have the money to go through $55 per every song that I'm kind of releasing. So that's a nice trick. Number seven is register for YouTube and SoundCloud revenue. So I believe that CD Baby, well, I know that CD Baby and some of the other distributors, like DistroKid and TuneCore, they collect your YouTube revenue if you opt in for it. And even kind of the is that right?
Yeah, we do that, yes.
Yeah, totally. So if you opt in, they can kind of collect YouTube, so you can keep it under one roof. But again, if you have other songs out there that aren't distributed with the same distribution company, or your distributor doesn't do this, there are other companies that will do this for you, like Audium, Repost Network, Indie Music, or AdRev. So these are companies to look into if you have just kind of a bunch of music out there with other artists. But also, it's worth noting, like if you, again, if you're a songwriter and you haven't released your these songs yourself as the artist, some of these other companies like Audium will go and collect your YouTube revenue on people who are kind of covering your songs on YouTube. Or Songtrust will do that also if you sign up with them as a songwriter. So what's actually, I'm curious, Kevin, what is CD Baby doing with SoundCloud? Have you been collecting, have you been working with SoundCloud?
We have some things in process. We're not officially doing it yet, but we're working towards that end.
Okay, yeah, SoundCloud is so new in terms of their revenue generating possibilities. It's like, you know, only this year did they really become licensed by all the majors and the publishers. So it's that's coming up, but it's starting to get worked out by everybody right now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, totally. Okay, so number eight seems obvious, but you got to put it in here. Pick your distribution company. You know, how are you going to get your music to iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, Deezer, Google Play, Tidal, and, you know, 100 other outlets? You have to pick your distribution company and do it sooner than later. Because, you know, for a time when iTunes was the only outlet that really mattered, you know, we had pretty accurate ideas of how, you know, how long it would take for each service. I think, you know, CD Baby, you guys have like what, a day or two or something, like really quick you can get
to
iTunes.
Yeah, it's back to a, if you do everything correctly, it's back to less than a day, but you know, a day is a good
but the thing is like a lot of times things get caught up or mistakes get made or your cover art isn't to the specification. So just leave enough time to do this. And then also like Spotify, I ran into a situation with Spotify. It was actually an artist that was helping out, and she was releasing her song. And with Spotify, like she had a huge blog premiering this song. And it was actually Pigeons and Planes, the blog, and gigantic, and they were premiering this song. So she put it up on SoundCloud, and that's the one they embedded, and they're all like, oh, go listen to it on Spotify. And a lot of the times, I know if you're wondering where the songs on Spotify playlist, like how the Spotify playlist curators, the playlisters, know where to find the music, a lot of them are reading blogs. And so she got this amazing premiere on Pigeons and Planes, but Spotify had been backed up and they didn't ingest the music. They were backed up for about a week. And so even though everything was set on the distributor side, Spotify just got backed up. I think they were like down for a day. And so you never know things that may happen. So it's even though the distribution is sped up to the point where you can kind of get to iTunes within a couple days and typically Spotify within a couple days, things may happen. So plan this out sooner than later, especially if you're having like big premieres and big releases. You want to absolutely make sure you're on Spotify and Apple Music and everywhere else like the day that you release it. So
yeah,
well in advance, do that.
The thing I would say on that is that, because a lot of people get into the process and they go, oh, crap, I needed to know the names of the songwriters, or I didn't know that I needed to know this. And so it's best to start getting in there and figuring out what you need to, you know, provide in order to have a successful release and, you know, that your music does get where it needs to be, complete with all the data at the right time. So
Totally.
Don't wait till the day before your release show.
Right. Oh my God. I can't tell you how many, how many artists come to me, and like really great, great artists. And they come to me the day before their huge release show, and they're having a major premiere in a blog. Like, hey, Ari, like, who should I, what's the best service right now to get my music on the Spotify and Apple Music? I'm like, dude, your release show's tomorrow, and you're asking me this now? Like, this is something you should have worked out, like, a month ago. And I got this guide on Ari's Take. Like, go read that. I love you, but go read that. It's like, you know, there's just like, it's my friends who are kind of coming to me for this stuff. It's like, just tell me who to use. I'm like, well, this is a conversation. totally. All right. So number nine, get a licensing company. So what licensing companies are is basically they're standalone companies that they're basically like song pitchers, song pluggers. Sometimes they're called licensing agents. And what they do is they actively pitch your music for film, television, and commercials. And now a licensing company, not to be confused with a music library, licensing companies are the ones they actively are pitching you. So whereas music libraries, are non-exclusive, and you can use there's ones out there like Audio Socket and the Music Bed and, you know, Rumblefish, and there's a bunch of them out there that these music libraries, and they're great, and I have my music with some of them as well. And basically, like, music libraries are where, you know, wedding photographers can go and grab music for $60. They get a license to use the music in their wedding video, or like corporations will come for in-house training videos and pay $300 for your instrumental to underscore their in-house corporate training video. Those are music libraries. Licensing companies, however, they're the ones who are basically chasing the $100,000 commercial placement, the Toyota commercial placement, or the $80,000 movie trailer placement, or the $20,000 TV placements and that kind of stuff. So, and those numbers exist. Those aren't exaggerations. Like I've seen the briefs where those numbers are out there. I mean, a lot of times, you know, most TV stuff is going to be between like $1,000 and $15,000 for kind of network television shows. Movies for major studio pictures can be anywhere from like, you know, $30,000 to the sky's the limit if you're like a superstar artist with a hit song. And movie trailers can also be very big money. But they can also be for like $10,000. But I mean, you know, that's, I know a bunch of artists who make their entire living and they support their families just on licensing. They don't tour, they don't play live shows, but what they do is they have a very active licensing company and who's pitching them all the time. They're getting ads, you know, commercial spots and movie placements and everything like that. And that's how they support their families. So I would recommend getting a licensing company. Now, in my book, I list the top 14 kind of best licensing companies out there that I've found from talking to a bunch of music supervisors and just kind of researching these licensing companies. So you can check that out. Also, if you the music business registry has a list with which basically you can buy for $100 and it has contact information for like every licensing company out there and every publishing company out there. So you can check that out as well.
Yeah, and I would just tell folks that it's not like we can come on the show and say, hey, this is the best one you should try, because there's different licensing companies that cater to different kinds of music, and you really do need to do your homework that the style of music you play, there might be a company that's really tied into that style of music and really get you great placements, where with those same tracks, another very reputable company might not be able to do much with it. So it is something that you have to spend time kind of understanding who they normally pitch to and the kind of catalog they have.
That's a really great point. I interviewed Lynn Grossman, who's the president of Secret Road, their licensing and publishing company. And she's also Ingrid Michaelson's manager. I interviewed her for the book. And, you know, she told me how Secret Road, very, very reputable licensing company, they got known for a very specific kind of music, kind of the acoustic artists. They're known for kind of these acoustic singer-songwriters and kind of the quirky singer-songwriters and that kind of stuff. And so when music supervisors or ad agencies or movie producers need that style of music, they go to Secret Road. Whereas Secret Road, you know, they don't rep hardcore metal music or much electronica or EDM or any of that kind of stuff. So like, they don't get briefs for that kind of stuff. So if you're an electronic artist, or if you're, you know, indie rock, or you're basically anything but that, Secret Road is not right for you. So definitely do that research. That's a really good point. Yeah. Cool. So number 10, this is create the folder of assets. Now, this is something that I just learned from doing on my own, from doing album releases on my own. And I was always scrambling when, press would hit me up and it's like, hey, send me a promo. I need a high-res promo photo. It has to be these specs. And we're, you know, or a magazine would say, hey, send me a promo photo or the album cover, and it needs to be print ready. Or people, you know, would request the lyrics. And so it was always like, I would have to spend, whenever I get a request, it was like spending 20 minutes to find that information or put it together or do it. So eventually I basically realized what all the things you needed. So what I call it the folder of assets. It's basically just put a folder on your desktop and title it the album title of your new album or your song, and put everything in there, like a text doc of all your lyrics for every song. Put waves of every song in there, including the instrumentals. So, you know, you'll probably eventually upload these directly to SoundCloud or to Bandcamp or to Box.com or Dropbox or that kind of stuff. But have them all in one location, waves and instrumentals. Also have 320 kbps MP3s of every song, including instrumentals. And why you want to do this is because a lot of music supervisors, and when you're pitching your stuff for licensing, a lot of them actually only want MP3s. They only work with MP3s. Waves are too big. And you can metadata tag MP3s. And what that is it's basically in the information of the MP3. So you go into iTunes or your music library, you click like Command I, or you click the info, and you can type in the comments of the MP of the song. Type in the comments. This song is by, you know, like I would do, it's Ari Herstand, my email, ari@aristake.com, my phone number, and you put, I own 200% of the song. That's what music supervisors like to see. And you put that in the comments of the song and the contact information, because then when music supervisors, basically, they put all these songs in a library, when they need to pull it out, they won't know where the song came from, but it's in the metadata of that MP3, and that's what they really want. Also put your high-res album cover in there, at least 3,000 by 3,000 pixels. That's huge, but you need high-res. Also put your high-res album cover without the text for posters, and sometimes people request that so they can use that. Put stems in there. Stems are, you know, the like bass only, the vocal only, the guitar only, the drums only. That's like for remixes. So if you're an artist who thrives kind of in the remix world or works with DJs or electronic artists or something like that, DJs and producers, remix artists request the stems. And also sometimes music supervisors and ad agencies request the stems as well. So have your stems there. Have print-ready promo photos. So like 300 DPI, and make sure these are the ready, you know, when magazines or newspapers request them. Also, but have the web versions of the promo photos, like 74 DPI. They're typically around like 1 megabyte in size. So if somebody asks you to email them this photo, you can, and you're not maxing out the limit of what the email has if you send them the print photo. And also, you want to make sure web versions, as they're saved, is like RGB, which is kind of the style of the color palette that the web uses. You want to save them so you know that they're going to look good. So save them as like web versions. Also in this folder, have all your merch designs. So when you kind of come out with new merch, you need the designs there that you can quickly and easily access when you need to reorder and that kind of stuff. So have all that there. Have a text doc with all your album credits. So, you know, and break these down by song. A lot of times, like what I like to do is when I put my songs onto SoundCloud and YouTube, I always put the full album credits for each song in the comments, in the description. Just because, like, personally, I appreciate when other people do that and I can see who played on the song. You don't have to like hunt around all over the place. So you should do that too. Have your bios in this folder of assets, like text docs of your bio, basically a short bio, kind of like a one paragraph thing. And then also your long bio, your extensive bio, and because people request both of those kinds of things. Have your promo materials like poster, flyer, advertising designs, have all these designs in there. Any of your demos that kind of when you're, I start this folder of assets right kind of during the songwriting process for the album. So put you know, I put demos in there and I put the songs and the lyrics and everything. And so it just kind of starts early on. Your music videos, pop those in there. Behind the scenes videos that you can easily access. And then the last thing, and this is really important, you're going to access this all the time, put a text doc containing the login information to all your sites and links that you'll need to reference frequently. So like your Dropbox link, your Box.com link, SoundCloud, Spotify, Bandcamp, Pledge Music, iTunes, all of that stuff. You want these links that you don't have to kind of hunt around for all the time. So those are all the things that I have that you should put in the folder of assets. Kevin, do you have anything to add there?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff there, but I think it's really good because it's amazing when you release an album how much time I've wasted trying to track this stuff down. Where if I had just taken the time to make a folder, and if you're in a band, I've made these and then put them on Dropbox because inevitably one of the other members is asking me, hey, where'd all those... I need an MP3 to send to this guy who's going to, you know, write a review or something. And it just makes it easy to put it all in one place. And because totally. You're going to be digging for it. So it's like if you do all these things once, get out of the way, and then you can just access it constantly because it becomes very useful.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Totally. Okay. Number 11, get new photos. This is kind of the revamp of you as an artist. This is kind of the rebrand of who you are. When you come up with a new song or a new album, it's the new you. And your photos need to be high quality, shot by a professional. Like, if your album is high quality, if you know, your album is professional and up to professional standards, your image needs to be up to professional standards as well and accurately represent the music that you're releasing. So get new photos. And you can never have enough good photos. You can always use photos for something. And now that, you know, Instagram demands that you nearly release a photo a day, like, have high quality photos. So do the photo shoot. But make sure, and this is important, don't just do a photo shoot where you just kind of, and this happens all the time, but where you just like talk to a photographer, like, yeah, just need some band photos. And like, oh, okay, cool. I know this really cool spot underneath this bridge. We can go do them there. No, don't do that, because it should not, there's definitely not a one size fits all for every band. The photographer needs to know your music, make sure that this photographer listens to your music and that you have a conversation about what the artistic aesthetic and the direction of what your project is and where you're going. So the aesthetic is so important. You know, if you're a sensitive singer-songwriter, but your photos are in a like a junkyard or in a back alley with graffiti everywhere, like that doesn't really work, you know. You have to do what's right for the sound and for what your project is. So you know, make sure that you discuss this and you work with people. Maybe you don't have a very clear understanding of what your aesthetic should be. So bring in some help. Talk to your friends, or maybe your friends who have that visual component, or you know, your significant others, or someone with a good eye, and they can kind of, you know, ask them, say, listen to this song, and now what do you feel? What do you think? Like, what colors come to mind? What aesthetics come to mind? Like, give me a location that comes to mind. What does this feel like to you? And then just let them go. And just have them go off with everything they feel and they think and use that. And so that can be really helpful. And then once you have your photos, I typically say pick your top 10 edited photos and put them in your folder of assets, and then pick your top 3 and use these for initial press and promo for your first single or when your album first comes out. The top 3 that people keep hitting over and over again. And then you can kind of roll the rest out as well. And just to touch on the photo aesthetic thing, a little bit more with the, you know, your photos should represent the story that you're telling around your album. And Kevin, you gave a really great speech at the DIY Musician Conference about the importance of your story. And I think that's a podcast also that you can go check out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you haven't listened to that yet, go listen to that right after this one on the City Baby podcast thing. It's great. It's a really great great explanation of the importance of your story. But yes, so your photos should fall in line with what the story is for your album and the music and everything. So 11. 12, write a new bio. This is just the same kind of thing. Like, new album demands new photos and demands a new bio, and also falls right in line with what that story is. And I, like I said before, I always have 2 bios, the short one and then the long one. The short one is like 1 to 2 paragraphs under 500 words. Then you have kind of the long one. But then also you do like put together an elevator pitch, basically like a one sentence description of what your sound is or what your band is. And I mean, you know, I'm still so, like, I guess I'm not surprised because of just how often it is, but like, so many musicians can't describe their band. When you go, when someone says, "Hey, what's your band like? What do you sound like?" and they stumble for 10 minutes trying to say, "Well, we kind of sound like this artist, but not really that. But we're really totally unique in our own thing." It's like that confuses the hell out of people, and they're like, after that 10-minute explanation, no one wants to listen to you because, like, I don't really understand what you just said. So I'm going over here. But cool, nice to meet you. Whereas if you just said, you know, we're kind of John Mayer meets Joan Baez, but with the guitars of Led Zeppelin. Like, whoa, that's interesting. Yeah, I dig that. I'm going to check that out. That sounds really hip. You know, have something like that. And I know you don't want to put yourself in a box. I feel you. But this is the best and easiest way for just to get someone in the door and then let them make their own opinions about it. But they need to hold on to something like that. So that's your elevator pitch too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is important that you have the short bio and the long bio, because if you're looking for press, it comes up all the time where they need that short bio comes in handy. But sometimes, depending on who you're speaking to, that's not enough. So it is totally good to have them ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can put the long bio on your website. That can be the one that, you know, when people, when your fans want to get more information, if you don't have a Wikipedia page for your band yet, then you should go, you put that long bio on your website, and then people who want to dig in can dig in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So number 13, write a new press release. So this is different from your bio, and it doesn't need to be posted anywhere online, but this is the thing that you send directly to media outlets, to the blogs, the newspapers, everything, announcing your new record. And I have an Aria's Take article online of how to write a press release. So you can just kind of search for that, in Google, like how to write a press release, Aria's Take, and you can find it online. It's also in the book. I go into detail with that too. Okay. 14, make a list of blogs to contact. Now, if this is part of your release plan, if part of your plan is that you want to get some blog coverage and recognition, then the way that you can kind of find them, and some of the biggest kind of the biggest blogs out there, a lot of them are part of Hype Machine, and the website for Hype Machine is hypem.com, so hypem.com, and you can see, I think they have like 500 or 600 blogs that they catalog. Basically, Hype Machine is kind of a blog aggregator site, and they rank, when songs come out, they have like trending songs. And so when more blogs kind of write about one new song, they start to chart on Hype Machine. And, you know, pretty much everyone in the industry looks at Hype Machine for what songs are hot and up and coming and trending. And even Spotify playlisters are checking out Hype Machine. So when you wonder like where the Spotify playlisters kind of get their information, Hype Machine and the blogs and everything else, those are kind of two of the places that they really turn to see like what is hot right now, who's talking about what. So if blogs are the way, what you want to do, check out Hype Machine. You can't submit, just to clarify what Hype Machine is, you don't submit to Hype Machine. Hype Machine is just an aggregator, and this is a place for you to figure out which blogs to contact. So what you can do is you go to Hype Machine in the search window, search for similar artists like you that are current, that just came out in the last couple of years. And then once you search for those artists, then you'll see which blogs wrote about those artists. Then you have to click through to those blog sites and then follow the instructions on how to submit your music to those blogs, because those are the ones who will write about you. Like the blogs, they're super diverse, and some blogs only cover hip-hop, but some blogs, you know, only cover EDM. Some blogs only cover singer-songwriter. So obviously you don't want to submit to the wrong one. So you can find the right blogs by searching on Hype Machine and then submitting directly to the blogs. And it's worth mentioning that a lot of blogs aren't taking open submissions anymore, and they use this site called Submit Hub. That's submithub.com as a website. And it was created by Indie Shuffle, the blog, the very popular blog Indie Shuffle, because they were getting inundated with artist submissions, like, we can't handle it anymore. We're only using Submit Hub, so you pay a little bit of money and you can submit, but then you're only charged if they actually listen to your song and give you feedback or write about it or something like that. So that's worth mentioning too.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, those can be, especially trying to find artists that you're similar to that have been featured on certain blogs and targeting blogs that, you know, are featuring your music. Never, you know, spam a giant list of blogs that, you know, are never going to feature your music. It's just a waste of time. It just gets people mad at you.
Right. And that's honestly, you know, because people have been doing that for so long, is one of the reasons that Indie Shuffle and so many other blogs basically shut down all submissions.
Yep.
Like, listen, you abused this and now we're forcing everybody to pay for it, a little bit of money to do it. Number 15 is create the videos. So now this is something that I know I'm going to get pushback from. And feel free to tweet, to hate tweet me on this point, at Ari's Take. I welcome it. But create, every song that you release should have an accompanying video on YouTube. Every song. Some kind of, it doesn't need to be a high-priced music video, but it needs a video component. Video is so, so important these days. It can be a lyric video. It can be a live video, it can be something, but it needs to look good, and it needs to be on YouTube, and every song needs to have it. And then I would make basically a YouTube album playlist, I think that's later in the list, but for all the songs. So put them on YouTube, every song, and then, you know, I know I'm going to get questions about Facebook and everything else, but We'll talk about Facebook in a little bit, but basically every song needs some kind of video component. People are so much more willing these days, unfortunately, to watch a video than they are to just listen to a song. So videos get people in and they need some visual stimulation while they're listening to your song for the first time before they can really get into it. So create a video. And there's actually cool apps, like inexpensive apps out there that can easily create lyric videos for you. So check those out. You don't need to hire a video, like a super pro video editor to create this expensive looking lyric video for you. You can just check out some apps, just search for lyric video on your apps. 16, create a Bandcamp page. So Bandcamp is the number one independent music store and kind of, more so really that has the, they now have like filtering and they have the editorial content, and it's become a community, really. And it's really the best way, in my opinion, to search for other artists in similar to you in different cities. So whereas in the MySpace era, that's honestly how I like routed tours and did show trades with other artists, was I would just search for artists on MySpace in various locations. But when MySpace died, there really wasn't another site that kind of had all the indie artists out there in all the locations that I look for. But Bandcamp has kind of started to pick up that slack. So get on Bandcamp. It's cool because you can kind of do, you know, name your price downloads. If people are still downloading music with that. Somebody literally paid me $20 for a single one time, and someone paid $200 for my album just because they wanted to support me more. People will do that for you if you let them know that they can. So Bandcamp is really cool in that respect. And also worth mentioning, they now have a subscription model. So for people, you know, who aren't really downloading music as much anymore, you can like charge your fans. It's almost like a fan club, like $40 a year, and they get access to all your music and then all this exclusive content that you can release through Bandcamp. So you know, just behind the scenes videos, demos, stories, blogs, like anything that you can do, and then first access to tickets and that kind of stuff. So yeah. 17, create or rebrand your website. So, you know, a new album demands a new website design. And so, I mean, really every couple of years you should rebrand your site, but you should definitely, you know, have this new website. And, you know, there's the website creator. There's so many like easy ways to create a website these days, like with Bandzoogle or Hostbaby or Squarespace, and even some like easy WordPress themes, Wix. So there's all these different companies out there that are helping you create really simple websites. So there's no reason to hire an expensive web developer that you need to hit up every time you need an update to your website. I actually strongly recommend against that. Pick one of these sites, these companies that will help you build a website. And then so you can reskin your site every once in a while, and that's great for your album you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially I see it happen a lot with releases. People go, they're you know, emailing their list, they're on social media, they're doing release shows, and then you go to their website and it's like, hey, this hasn't been updated in a long time.
Yeah.
It doesn't reflect the news. I've actually seen this happen with like you know, artists on major labels and stuff. Not the, you know, the upper echelon, but like guys that you would think would still know better, and it's something to not forget.
Yeah, it really is just like, you know, another thing to check off the list. And what you want to do is the day that you release your album or your song, it's basically everything should represent that. All your social sites, your website, everything. So when you start to click around and find your Instagram, everything online that is official information, official content by you, by the band, should all be like showcasing and representative of the new album. And website especially, absolutely.
Yeah.
Which brings us to number 18, which is rebrand your social sites. Yeah, and so it's basically, you know, use all the new photos, the album cover, your new bio, and just rebrand all of that stuff. And create them if you don't have them yet, but make sure that they kind of look good too. 19, get a mailing list. So if you don't have a mailing list, definitely want to start one. You know, this is, even though it may seem really outdated and archaic, it is the most important fan engagement tool you have. So it's actually, there was a study done that said that email marketing is 40 times more effective than Facebook and Twitter combined. Meaning, and also like the click-through rates are a lot higher, the open rates are a lot higher, and most importantly, the conversion rates are so much higher, meaning people who click through and actually buy stuff from you or buy tickets or whatever via email versus Facebook or Twitter. So get an email list, start it, and then use it. Use it, you know, I would say every 2 weeks is a perfect timeline for how often you should be sending emails out to your list. It's not too much, every 2 weeks, and just keep them updated. It doesn't need to be a full, you know, I know people say, well, I don't have new stuff to talk about every 2 weeks. It's just like, just send something, pop a photo, a new photo in there, and just say, hey, what's up? Like, this is, maybe you have an interesting quote, an inspirational quote, or maybe you have like a couple song lyrics that you came up with, or maybe, you know, maybe you're a really good storyteller. So every time they open their email, they're going to get like a really interesting story or something unique that is unique to you. So personalize it. That's what people want to see when they open it up. You know, Matt Nathanson writes all of his emails himself in all lowercase letters. It probably drives the grammar nerds insane, but that's his style. That's his style, and I love it. When he opens it up, it's so personal. He's a hilarious dude, and all of his emails are all lowercase, and then he tweets in all lowercase. That's just like his thing. And so, you know, just have a thing, and you'll have to think about what your thing is. I can't tell you what your thing is going to be, but it should represent and be unique to you. And some email list management platforms are like MailChimp or FanBridge or iContact, Constant Contact, Benchmark, Sendinblue. There's a bunch out there, and you check those out.
Yeah, they're really important. You know, it's, and we live in a world where a lot of people kind of go to social media first, but if you want people to click and take action, the inbox still rules big time.
Totally. These are like your super fans. These are the ones that are going to support you for your entire life. And so and email isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So whereas social sites come and go, and you lose all your fans when social sites die or lose traction, email, you still, it maintains to be the standing strong through all of this. So yeah. Number 20, submit to Pandora. So as of today, when we're taping this in November of 2016, Pandora is just an internet radio station. And that's changing very soon. They're starting to get into the Spotify, Apple Music waters, where they're going to be interactive. But as of now, Pandora is the number one internet radio station, and they're exclusive, meaning they review all the music that comes in. So it's not like Spotify or iTunes, where you can just send them their music and they'll put it up, no questions asked. They review it, and not everything is accepted. So to submit to Pandora, you can do that by going to submit.pandora.com, and there's a whole process that you can follow on how to submit your music to Pandora. But you definitely, no matter what kind of music you make, you absolutely should be on Pandora if you can.
Yeah, and they do take, there's some turnaround time for that. So that's one of those things, if even if you get accepted, it can take several months before your music shows up in the system. So it's something you should do the second your album is released. They do, it is required that the album is available in stores.
That's a good point.
The second it goes live, get on that.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. 21. Create new merch. So, it's a new album or new tour demands new merch. So everything, this is like the sparkly new you. And so definitely just kind of get creative with your merch offerings. And doesn't CDB have someone I feel like I saw something about like helping with t-shirt printing or something like
Merchly.
That?
We have a Merchly, brand called Merchly, yeah.
Cool. I got to look into that some more.
Yeah, we have a really cheap for one color t-shirts. It's a really good deal for a shorter run too. So nice. It's an option. But there's lots of we're trying to just make it some like specific packages. They're cheaper, but depending on what you're needing, there's different options out there. And t-shirts are kind of a weird animal. So it's good to do some research on what's out there and based on what you need.
Totally. I mean, yeah, shop around. I mean, I've been using Red Wall prints out of Milwaukee for years, and they've been amazing for me. But I've experimented with a bunch of ones, and there's so many stuff out there. But depending on your merch, the kind of merch you want, different merch companies will maybe be better for your purposes. Cool. 22. We're almost there. Box.com and Dropbox.com. So, we talked about before, Kevin, you were saying that your band wants you to put songs up on Dropbox so everyone can access it from a central location. That's super important. Music supervisors, when you're pitching them, never, never, never attach a song to your email. Actually, in general, just never attach anything to an email unless someone specifically requests that you attach something to an email. It just clutters up their inbox. It takes away space, and it's honestly, that's one of the biggest faux pas that you can do, and we'll get you blacklisted and your email will be sent straight to the trash. I hear this over and over and over again. Never attach anything to an email unless they explicitly say, please attach it to your email. So that being said, how do you send people music or photos or that kind of stuff? Dropbox or Box.com, both, they're great for songs now because you can, once you click the link, it opens up a window and you can either stream the song right there in the window or you can download it. Like I hate downloading music. It drives me crazy, and then you have to pop it in your library and then sync it to your phone. There's just so many steps. I never download music anymore, so I want to stream everything. And so like I freelance sometimes as a trumpet player, and when people, like when bands send me their music, most of the time they're doing it by now. They'll send me streamable links. Like I don't want to have to download the song or whatever to learn the song. So just have these readily available and have those links in your folder assets, to the links to Box.com or Dropbox. Mm-hmm. 23, SoundCloud profile. So SoundCloud is is still growing. It's still as popular as ever, and it still is growing, and it's really important. So definitely get your music up on SoundCloud. It is also, like, a lot of musicians don't realize that SoundCloud is actually an active community of music lovers. Like YouTube is a community. And, you know, YouTube is not just a video hosting website, and SoundCloud is not just a song hosting website. It's actually a community. And there are SoundCloud-ers out there, just like there are YouTube-ers, and there's people who really, like, just love SoundCloud, and they explore it. And I've had friends who they spent a few months, they just made SoundCloud kind of their first priority, and they cracked it. And then they started getting hundreds of thousands of plays on SoundCloud because they navigated the waters. And Buddy Boat actually has a really cool SoundCloud Bible guide that I think you can buy for a little bit. And if you really want to get into SoundCloud, like, he explains how to really crack SoundCloud. So worth checking that out. Let's see. Number 24.
Yes.
Yeah. smarturl.it links. This is really cool, and I discovered this not too long ago, but smarturl is one of the best link tracking services out there. And meaning you can get so much information. So instead of sending someone the actual direct link to your Spotify profile or the direct link to iTunes or Bandcamp or whatever you're doing, honestly, you should create a smart URL link for everything and add those into your folder of assets, because you can track it all. You can see how many people clicked each link. Not only that, where they clicked it from, like their location, the device they used, and smart URL also, this is crazy, but you can set it up where you can make a smart URL link to your music. And if someone's on an iPhone, it goes to iTunes. And if someone's not on an iPhone, it goes to Amazon. That's crazy. So it's one link, and based on the device they're using to click it, it will send them to a different place. Also, what's great about smart URL is you can change the link. So for instance, I'm using it right now for my book. So I'm promoting the book pre-order on Pledge Music because you can get extra swag, and it's you know, it's just like a fun way to kind of do the pre-order. But I've been putting this link all over the web and sending it to everybody. And once the pre-order ends, I didn't want that link to just die, because if you discover, you know, later, I want you to make sure that you can still click to it. So once the pre-order finishes, I'm going to go into Smart URL and change where that link is directing people to. So right now, my smarturl.it/rebook is to my book, and right now it's going to Pledge Music. But come November, or come December 6th, once the book comes out, that is now, I'm going to change that link to go to Amazon, but it's still going to be smarturl.it/rebook. I don't have to change the link. So smarturl is really incredible, and definitely highly recommend it.
Yeah, and these are good to, you know, it's helpful to use on social media, or just when you're, it just makes it easier. You can brand them. You can, and a lot of the services like smarturl, I think, has, you can track. I know Bitly is another one that people will use, and you mentioned Bitly, and they'll give you some stats on people clicking, and so it's also a helpful marketing tool.
Totally, yeah. Tracking this stuff is really helpful. 25, register your trademark. So if you haven't done that for your band name or your logo, or like if you have a new logo for your new album, that's definitely worth doing. It's worth mentioning, trademarking can be quite complicated. So I would recommend kind of finding a trademark attorney that can kind of help you with this. It you know, may cost a little bit, but it's worth kind of doing that right. I don't know if you have anything.
Yeah,
about
back in the day, Small Town Poets, we trademarked our name, but I had nothing to do with the process, so I haven't done this recently. I know there's some forms online, some portals online to do that. So I don't remember what the cost is. I think it's become far more accessible, but they do have to do some searches and things.
Yeah.
In order to get it done properly. But it is a good idea, especially, you know, as you get more popularity to, because even if you have an established name and you're like, I know there's no other bands like this, but you have a cool logo that you like, and it represents your brand. It's really important that you handle this because you never know where someone's going to come out of the woodwork with a similar looking logo. I mean, it happens all the time, and you're going to be like,
totally.
Oh, crap. Now I got to change my logo.
Right. Yeah, because even if it's like similar, they could come after you and say, no, you got to change it.
Yes.
Because they registered the trademark.
Yeah.
It's confusing and whatever. So definitely. Cool. And then the final one, number 26, we made it through. Form a corporate entity, like an LLC, if that's the best one for you. But basically, it gives you some legal protections. And if you're kind of, once you start to really grow and turn into like a major professional outfit, you can kind of do business under, you know, as that LLC or the corporate entity, whichever one that you choose, an S corp or whatever. And it gives you some legal protections. It enables you to open a bank account, like a band bank account, and that kind of stuff. So that can be pretty helpful too.
Indeed, yes. And it does start to create some tax implications. So when you do that, you will have to file taxes for your corporation. But it does allow for, like you said, a band account. It does make it easier to push money around. It gets really irritating if you're having to, you know, take money and put it in a personal account. And, you know, people start writing checks to your band name and you're like, oh, crap, I can't cash this now.
Right. I ran into that.
I did as well.
Exactly. And also, like, you know, you don't want people to be writing checks to one person in the band's name because then that person has to deal with all the tax headaches.
Yes.
And that's not really fair for that one person in the band to have to take on that tax burden and have to fill out all the, you know, the W-9s and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this will vary from state to state what business implications are, and even sometimes county to county. Just there's different laws around business in different places. But usually an LLC is pretty easy and inexpensive to set up, and it does make it easy to just take care of taxes. And so no one is like having to figure it all out on their own tax form, personal tax form. So
totally. Yeah. Absolutely. So boom, 26.
26. We made it. No, there's lots of great stuff in there. And it's all things that, you know, that I think I've had to wade through every independent release I've done where you're like, oh man, I got to go do this now. And I got to do that. So you've got kind of the quick checklist at the beginning and then, all the detailed descriptions, underneath. And so I think that's really helpful. And
cool.
even if you're an artist and you're starting a new release and you're like, man, that's a lot of stuff. Just start, you know, I like the checklist thing because it's like, just start hammering things away, you know, instead of goofing off on the internet for an hour at night, tackle a couple of these. And
totally.
Especially once you set up, I think one of the ones that I would encourage people to do is that folder of assets. Once you get that set up, a lot of these things become much easier because that's part of my problem is I'll be like, I need to go set up this thing. Oh, I need to find that. But where did I put that folder? You know, where did I put that document that has the short bio? Well, the long bio is somewhere else. And the stem tracks are somewhere else. It's just like, put it all in one place and then you can hammer through a lot of these pretty quickly. And they're important things because, they are, you know, it's all the things that you need to help support the release, especially if you've got touring going on, shows and press and other things, you know, just trying to reach out to fans. So
totally. Yeah, absolutely.
So the book is coming out December 6th. This podcast will be up in time. So there'll be still a couple weeks left for people to go pre-order the entire book. And they should do that. They should do that at the Pledge Music page. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, basically just go to arihurstand.com and then that's the easiest way. There's a link to it directly, or if you're listening to this after the pre-order is finished, still arihurstand.com will have all the info to everything. So yeah, you can just go there. That's the easiest place, I'd say.
And on December 6th, it will be available at Amazon and
everyone else? Everywhere, really. I mean, Amazon, it'll be, I did the audiobook version, so I read the audiobook. So if you do audiobooks, you can get the audiobook on Audible or iTunes or however you listen to audiobooks. If it's on Kindle, Nook, all that stuff. And then it should be at Barnes & Noble's. If it's not at your Barnes & Noble, please go and tell them to get it, request it. That's what my publisher told me, is that, you know, each Barnes & Noble's kind of, they buy their own books based on what they think their audience is going to like. So if you're at a Barnes & Noble and they don't have the book, please just go say, hey, order the book, and that'd be amazing. But yeah,
interesting. I always assume Barnes and Noble is just like, you know, some big corporate buy, and it was what it was.
You know, it's interesting. My girlfriend lives near Appleton, Wisconsin, and we went to Barnes and Noble in Appleton, Wisconsin, and I went to the music section, which was just a music shelf, which was really just a music corner of the shelf, which really had one music business book. In the entire store, there was one music business book, a singular book, and that was Donald Passman's All You Need to Know About the Music Business, which hopefully this book will be the updated, basically the updated version of that. The interesting thing, the difference is, like, you go to the LA Barnes & Noble here at the Grove in LA, and there's literally like an entire music business section that's like an entire row of just music business books. So that's kind of the difference, and they're both Barnes and Nobles, but it's, yeah, really just based on the market and depending on, you know, what people are into there.
Well, cool. I look forward to getting a copy myself, and it'll be great to see what happens when it gets out there, and you'll have to go on a book tour and sign copies and do the whole book tour thing.
Totally. I'm planning to do the book tour starting next year. So if you'd like me to come to your area, wherever you are, just please, you know, shoot me an email or a tweet or something and let me know where you are. And I'm trying to just kind of get everywhere. And what's cool, we're going to do like a little like master class for the book tour, where I'm going to get emerging artists or local artists in every city I visit, and kind of do a little master class where they'll come up and we'll dig through all their materials and talk about, you know, putting together a real cohesive path moving forward for their band. And then also I want to get kind of the local celebrities, kind of the established artists in each town that I visit, and bring them up too to kind of guide the younger artists or the newer artists, say kind of how they cracked their local town. And so that's going to be kind of how we're going to structure the book tour. And I'm like really excited to just like meet so many musicians out there, and then just kind of help, you know, facilitate that kind of a thing.
Cool. So what's up next for you? The book's out, going to be out soon. What are you going to be doing, a regular touring this year? Just any new releases coming out?
Yeah, so this funk band that I've been working on, we're called Brassroots District, and it's actually not, we haven't released anything yet. So I'm working on that. We're writing. We have about 8 songs written. We finished. We tracked one song already. We got the Tower of Power horn section to come in and lay down on that. And so we're putting together this band. If you pre-order Pledge Music, I'm basically like sending all the updates of like how I'm launching this band right now to the people on Pledge, just so like you can see the process. But yeah, I'm launching this new band from scratch. So I've been doing the singer-songwriter thing for the last 12 years. And I just got really inspired around 70s funk music. And so I wanted to launch a 70s funk band. So that's kind of going to be my main thing this year. I mean, yeah, the book stuff, but really it's like this funk band, which I'm really excited about. So that's kind of where most of my efforts are going to be focused, I guess.
Well, cool. It'll be interesting to hear all your learnings and new things that you try launching a new project. That's always fun.
Totally. Yeah. Right on.
Well, thanks for being on the podcast. I'll put links to where the Pledge Music campaign, and then when it's on Amazon, I'll have to go back and update it. So we have
the I'll send you the smart URL.
Okay, so you already have it for Amazon. Is it up on Amazon already, just not available?
It is, yeah. You can actually buy it on Amazon right now, pre-ordered also.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah,
send me those links, and I'll post them on the podcast show notes, and people can go link right there, and we can put to use number 24. 25 or 24, the smart URLs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, 24, number 24. I had to scroll back down to see which number it was. But all right, man. Well, cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I'm looking forward to checking out the book. It's going to be exciting. And I'm sure we'll have you back sometime soon. Our paths will cross somewhere out there on the road.
Definitely.
All right, man.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kevin.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. I will put links in the show notes where you can click on through to find Ari's book, take advantage of that pre-sale, or just find it at Amazon. You will find the show notes at cdbabypodcast.com. And if you'd like to weigh in on a topic, or you want to be featured on our upcoming listener feedback show, you can do so. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. And if you do call the listener line, try to keep the call within 2 minutes or less. That helps us use it on the show. And you can also just leave questions or comments in the show notes at cdbabypodcast.com. And that'll be a fun episode. We'll be doing that fairly soon. So get your questions or comments in, or success stories. We love to hear them. And that's going to do it this time. We'll catch you later. Bye.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.